Yes, I am indeed delighted to be able to worship with you this morning and to have Natalie nearly a year old here. This is, just preparation for her birthday. And I hear she's working on walking. And it makes me think that when I first came here, Diana couldn't see over this pulpit. Or even around it, she had to walk. Well, she had to displace herself to see around it. But anyway, it's great to see how much she has grown. Now, last week I talked about a service-driven life, and I was speaking from Philippians, the first chapter two, the first four verses there, and. Now, today, the focus is on the one thing. And Dorothy's going to be sharing a story that comes out of one of our walks this week that some of our best discussion takes place while we're walking. Sort of, we get vented from certain things that are on our minds. And eventually we get to the point where we have good and healthy discussion. Not that the venting's unhealthy, but we get to the point where, okay, we've said all that. And anyway, I asked Dorothy about sharing the story that she's going to serve or share. But it sort of came out, it comes out of that, driven by service in a sense. But the other part of it is this Micah passage that was just read. And that the title that I chose for the sermon is The One Thing. And the context of that title is that in some of the reading I was doing this past week, I realized, my mind is so much all over the place. And Steve, you really need to focus on what's the one thing you really want to say today. And anyway, that kept coming back to me. But the thing is, the one thing I want to say is actually always more than one, because for me, that whole triad of doing justice, loving kindness, and walking humbly is one thing. Just like God is three in one, what we're called to is one, but often it's three or four or the fruit of the Spirit. So it can be a number of things, but if we view them as one, what that means is that they're held together. They're held together and they give balance to each other. And in the adult Sunday school class, there was a little tiny bit of discussion about service and grace and, works and grace, that tension. Well, I think that's not a biblical tension in the least, because in story after story, worship and service and being the love of Christ to others is held together. It's not simply a matter of proclamation of the word. So I'm going to turn this over to Dorothy for a bit, and then I'll come back.
When we were living in Elkhart, we met a woman and her children who helped us to know more tangibly about God's amazing love. A love that does not let go. Maria was a young mother in her mid-30s with three children, 11 years old, 4 years old, and 2 months old. She was Spanish-speaking with limited English. Sarah, another woman in our congregation, who was working at a women's shelter that provided temporary housing for abused women, shared a prayer concern. She said, "There's a woman with three children needing a place to live. Her allowed time at the shelter was coming to an end, and she had no family in the area to go to. At the end of the service, Sarah asked me directly if we could take them. Steve was out of the country on an administrative trip. So I called him, and together we decided that it seemed like the right thing to do. It felt like a call from God. We had two empty bedrooms since the boys were both gone from home, so we prepared them. When Maria was brought to us, Maria explained in her minimal English that all four of them, she and the three children, would sleep in the same room. We felt like the reason might be that we were strangers. It was an unfamiliar place, and she didn't know if she could trust us. She seemed fearful of her situation. She had come through significant abuse. She had to find a way to take care of her three children, one being a newborn. She had no job and no way to live independently. We invited them to eat meals with us, but they refused. They had minimal food, mostly breakfast cereal. After a week or two, they began to accept our hospitality and friendship. Maria offered to wash dishes and clean the house on a daily basis. They relaxed, and we enjoyed time together. Steve's humor helped to bring lots of laughs among us. Maria began to talk more, and she told us her story of having to leave two children when her violent husband arranged with a coyote to take her into the desert and leave her to die. This was in Mexico. It was only because the others in the vehicle refused to continue the trip unless she was allowed back into the vehicle that she survived. It was in this way that she came to the US. Maria and her children stayed with us for 3.5 months. Over the next 5 years, we saw her and the kids off and on, but there was a year period where we didn't see her at all. She was searching, she was working in factories, she had several relationships with men that were unhealthy. One evening, after not seeing her for a year, she came to see us. She was apologetic, but she was excited to tell us that she had met a man that was kind to her and loved her, and that they were planning to get married. He owned a Mexican restaurant and was searching spiritually himself. They came to church the next Sunday, and they kept coming. They were married and then baptized about a year later. Both continue to be active in the congregation, and he has been serving as an elder for the last several years. At the time Maria came to live with us, she started coming with us to church. She continued coming occasionally on her own after they were living away from us. She came even though she didn't understand much English. She invited several Spanish-speaking friends, and then there were other Spanish-speaking people who started to come sporadically. And so the congregation incorporated Spanish songs into our worship. It was the beginning of establishing a separate Spanish worship service. Now the congregation has decided to meet together, and they have a trilingual worship service: English, Spanish, and French. They are welcoming to immigrants. Maria is in the legal process of becoming documented. She pays an immigration lawyer $1,000 a month as she waits, and she's been waiting for several years. We're grateful that we responded positively to Maria's need for housing, which we felt was a call from God. God continues to fulfill God's purposes, and we pray for her and her family's safety during these threatening times.
So that story came out of in a sense, that discussion of doing just things, loving kindness, and walking humbly, and the reality of the fact that 2,000, now perhaps 3,500 people a day are being picked up and deported by ICE. There are dedicated airlines. There are now we've seen that in Richmond at the airport, there are regular appearances of jets that are parked at a distance from the terminal, and vans pull up and unload their cargo of people and send them who knows where. And so it's out of the context of talking about what it means to do justice, to love kindness, and what walk humbly in our context here, that we decided to share that story. The reality, as I said, for me, is that justice, kindness, and the humble walk are held together. And I must say right now, at this particular time, one of the tensions between, it's not really a tension between Dorothy and me, is, but it's one of the ongoing conversations we have where I say, I didn't know that at 70 years old, you were going to become an activist. And the reality of the fact, though, was when we lived in Kansas, you know, the white trains would go through Newton, Kansas. Does anybody remember what the white trains are? Class? No, you don't? You might have had them here. I don't know. They were the nuclear trains. And they were transporting nuclear missiles to silos. And there in just outside of Newton, Kansas, in big open fields, there are multiple silos. And so there would be demonstrations there at the silos, different times, prayer vigils. There would be times where we would be informed that there's a white train coming through, and it'd be often at night. It would be sort of clandestine activity. And we always, or we frequently wondered the effectiveness of these demonstrations, whether they brought change, whether anybody knew. For many years, we didn't pay the taxes on our phone bill. We would write a handwritten letter every day with the check we were sending in the mail to the phone company and say, we are withholding this portion of our bill. And anyway, they were small things. But it's in the context of that, you know, when actually before Dorothy and I got married, when we met, we were both serving with Mennonite Central Committee. Dorothy was in Berlin, I was in Paris. And one of the first when I met her, you know, there were a few things that came together. One, she was gorgeous and caught my single eye here. Even my blind eye twitched a little. But anyway, I saw her walking across the room, and there you go. It started already. But then once we talked together, we both had this sense of calling that God was leading. And there was already evidence in the fact that she had been with MCC for 5 years, and or 4 years at the time. But anyway, we both had this sense of call to service. We both had a sense of call to doing justice, loving kindness, walking humbly. I didn't make it to Africa at that time. The war in Chad meant that I didn't leave. I ended up working with African students in Paris at the Mennonite Center there. But ultimately, what I understood is that ultimately that was maybe my first major humiliation in life. Because the thing that I understood in working with Africans in Paris was that these African students often were sharing, eight people in an apartment, and it'd be a single room studio, and they would have a couple of bunk beds and they'd sleep there in shifts, so they'd. Two people would be, or four people might be there one day or one night, or each night, and they take turns depending on their work schedules and so on and so forth. But in working with those students, I was confronted with the fact that my service seemed like nothing compared with their sacrifice. So that was one thing. But the next thing was that I also was humbled by the fact that they were often raised speaking five languages. And I thought I was doing well learning a second language as I was learning to work in French. And the more I worked with them, the more I was challenged by what Christian faith meant. And the fact of the matter is, though, I had gone into MCC almost with a dare because I felt called to work in Africa. That was a clear sense of calling. And it came out of study I was doing there at EMU in my second year and so forth. And I applied with MCC. They said, "You're too young. You don't have enough experience with this or that. We can assign you someplace here in the States." And I said, "Look, I can do whatever. I can find a place to work in the States if, there are lots of options here. If I'm only interested in MCC, if you'll give me an international assignment, because that's what I felt called to." And ultimately, they trusted me and they gave me an assignment. But then war broke out in Chad and I ended up staying in Paris. So ultimately that led to meeting Dorothy and so on and so forth. But the point of it is to say that these students there living in Paris, for me, that was fundamentally a game changer. In terms of understanding that my sacrifice was really minimal, they were coming out of regions where they had suffered war, they had suffered loss of family members, they had suffered all kinds of injustices, and they were, in a sense, mentoring me in the faith. So one of the humiliating things about life, or humbling things, to say it differently, is that we learn to recognize Christ in the one that we think we're serving. And it transforms our way of understanding the faith and God's work. So when I say it's God's work, not ours. It really comes out of learning that God, yes, was leading and directing and so forth, but really, I was the one learning that, not the one sharing the love of Christ. I thought I was sharing way more than I was. So I could go, as you know, on and on. And I feel like I started down that path here. But I was just going to say two things there. One was that early on in this relationship with Maria and her daughters, one of the things that happened was the middle daughter was in our bathroom, and she reached up. We had this nice little brass towel bar, and she was just the right height to grab onto that. So what happened? She just tore it out. And there, her mother called me in, and she was clearly afraid. And the daughter was terrified because both of them had no idea how I would respond. Will he beat this girl? Will he be furious with her? And so I went in and I saw that panicky fear on their faces. And I said, "Oh, Steve, ground yourself." Even though it had been a failed experiment to put that towel bar up, because it was, anyway, a disaster. But it was like God used that little experience to help me realize just how fragile the ground was with this family. And so I got down on my hands and my knees there, and I spoke with her, and I said, "I'm not angry with you. This can be easily repaired," even though that was speculation, wishful speculation. But these few months we spent with them, and just seeing how fragile the trust was a testimony to us as to how to walk in this world, because we're surrounded by so many people who are so fragile. And so it grieves us both in a very in a difficult way to hear about thousands of people each day being grabbed up, most of whom are not criminals, most of whom have no criminal record whatsoever, and they're being ripped out of this place where they've established. The person who's done the most work on the house we live in has disappeared. We have no idea. We have no way of connecting with him at all. And we just wonder what's happened, whether he voluntarily left or whether he was taken. But the point of it is that it's impacting us all, this lack of kindness, this lack of due process, this lack of justice. And so the one thing that I require, God says that God requires of us, is that we do justice, a verb and the adverb, I guess. Justice is the adverb. Noun, okay, sure. Do justice, love kindness, and walk humbly. That is the one thing we're called to do.